welcome to Prostate Cancer, a pain in the ass, episode 4, our final episode of this series.
Yeah, we were going to do 5, but we might not.
We're going to wrap this up quickly. Could make this 30 seconds.
We
looked at the 5th episode, but didn't think it really warranted its own episode, so we're going to build it into this one. Just as we've said on the previous episodes, I'm Henry Butler, and you are
Cassie,
and we run the Butler's Wine Cellar, a wine shop in Brighton. And I had prostate cancer when I was 49, and now 53, and I'm free of cancer because I had a surgery, as did my brother at the same time. So this is just our story about what happened. This episode will be about how you recover post-operation. Hopefully it's helpful to some of you, and if it isn't, pass it on to someone who it would be helpful to. And it's very much, it's our experience, it's our opinions, but if you really need proper information, please speak to your GP or look at the website prostatecanceruk.org, which is a very useful tool, I would say.
Yep.
So, episode 3, I'd had the operation and you picked me up and took me home.
Yeah, put you into bed.
And then
the moaning began.
Misery. Like a scene from Misery with my legs and arms strapped to the bed. But I'm just trying to get my head around how you feel after an operation. And what did the surgeon say?
I mean, you were pretty dosed up when you came out. The initial thing that we'd been told is when you have surgery, you will feel like you've been hit by a train.
Which I did.
And that's pretty much the state you came out in. But it's not far off. I think physically your body, the impact that your body takes is quite big. And it was quite a long surgery. I think you were under for, was it 4 or 6 hours?
Something like that.
It was quite a long time.
He wants to get a bit better at that, doesn't he? Speed it up a bit.
No, it's a robot that did it.
Yeah, but you do control the robots with your hands, I think.
I don't know what he does.
I saw it, but I didn't want to look at it.
No, and he was not awake during this, by the way.
No.
He didn't actually see it in the thing, in surgery.
But because although it's keyhole surgery, so you come away and you've got, I can't remember how many little cuts on my stomach.
Well, I can, because I was the one who was looking after them. And anyway, right. So you basically have a cut on your belly button, 2 cuts on your belly button, where the pipes go in. And then you have 2 cuts sort of in line with your belly button on each side of you. And then 2 lower down, sort of 2 inches underneath those. If you were a lady, it would be sort of ovary area. So
good,
you've
detail.
Got 6 incisions on your stomach at this point, which you didn't see. So these are all wrapped up and covered, and you don't touch them or do anything with them for a while. So you want the stitches to heal and you want to leave all that alone.
Yes, you've got stitches internally and stitches on the outside, and they all dissolve and disappear, don't they? But I was going to say, although it's keyhole surgery, so it's not super invasive, you do get a lot of moving around of your internal organs, I think. And that's partly why you feel like you've been battered.
You have to get to the prostate, it's tucked away behind other things which you need to move. So that's what happens. So yeah, so your insides take a battering. I mean, it's incredible. They take it out, they whip out the nasty bits and they stick it all back in and sew you up.
Yeah, I bet he's hidden something in there, isn't he?
Hopefully a load of money or some diamonds.
And I think from memory, it was you just get paracetamol, maybe, what is it?
You get codeine. You decided that you would only take paracetamol. Stupid. Take the codeine for as long as they tell you to, which is 3 days or something, because you can't poo if you take it any longer. So take those as instructed and then top up with paracetamol as the backup. Codeine's your friend when you're in that kind of pain, and it'll help you sleep.
Yes,
because you get bored, especially if your name's Butler.
Really? You're on the attack today, aren't you?
Don't even.
God. And I found at that point for like probably for two weeks, I would have said I was really counting the hours when the paracetamol started to wear off. It's supposed to take it every 4 hours, but when you get to two or three, the pain was real and quite challenging. So it's a mindset, which is part of the recovery process. I would stress this, that the nurses, when you're getting ready to leave and they know that you're going home to recover, they very much stress that positive attitude and moving around will get you into a good place a lot quicker than if you get quite depressed or negative or don't,
it's very
don't
tough
move.
Yeah, because it's easier said than done, and when you're physically restricted, it's frustrating that you can't do your normal day-to-day business, and I think that's the challenge, and that will get you down mentally. So I think if you can try and view it as this is something that you have to do short term for a long term recovery, you've got to just listen to the rules and stick to them. And yes, it's a couple of weeks of discomfort and not being able to move properly and not being able to walk around the streets and go for a jog or whatever you want to do. But long term, it means that hopefully there won't be any complications and it all heals properly.
So anyone who has this operation, they tell you that to allow a full year to get back to anything looking like normality. And I think that was actually the case for me. That's after a year, I didn't really think about it so much. I was just going along as normal. But during that process, you have little challenges, or I saw them as little challenges, and you sort of tick them off, and each one is progress. So I think you've got to keep your mind on that track. And I was quite lucky because it was a really nice summer that year, and there was COVID around, and so I had to be isolated.
I was
going to
say, no one else was going anywhere or doing anything, so it wasn't like you were missing out. There was no FOMO.
No FOMO. So
And I was going to say, you have a catheter as well. So you come home with a catheter attached to your Johnson. So you are not going to the toilet. You are weeing automatically into a bag.
Yeah.
Which is attached to you.
We were shown how to use that.
Didn't pay attention.
Did pay attention. It's just like it's a bit.
No, you decided to empty that when you're on your codeine and you're having a little. I'll try and go for a little walk myself without asking for help. So you have the catheter, which is attached to a tube, which is in the end of your schwanz, and the tube goes into the bag where the wee fills up. And then when the bag gets full, you have to change the bag for a fresh one, which means you turn like a...
No, you empty it, don't you?
Like a beer tap. Yeah. It's like a little tap that you turn off and on to remove the bag, empty the wee out, put it back on, open the tap.
Yes, and there was only one occasion when the bottom tap was left open.
Mm. So there was, I know, yes. Yeah, so there was a lot of
carpet.
Wee... pouring out onto the floor.
Luckily, we're renting at the time, so it's not our carpet.
But no, luckily I'm there with a towel.
Taps and things. And so that you strap to your leg, your thigh, and carry it around with you 24 hours for 2 weeks. And then when you're at night time, you can unstrap it and put it somewhere, like on your bedside cabinet or something. But the trouble in the night time is it fills up, so you have to
keep an eye on it. You don't know.
back it up. So it's uncomfortable when it fills up. It feels like it's tugging on your insides, and so it requires a bit of maintenance, and it does make it extremely difficult to sleep. Because you don't want to be rolling around and ripping wires out.
It was the sort of worry of the unknown.
Yeah.
So you think you're going to rip your dick off.
Basically, and the catheter tube is made out of barbed wire. That's what I pictured. So,
and that you had for 2 weeks. So we had one accident with it, and then you went back in and they took it out, didn't they?
Yeah.
So you don't remove it yourself. And no, I think sort of, towards okay, we'll the end,
that process then.
When it was coming out, at that point, it was a bit sore. It gets a little bit sore around your knob.
Yeah, but that's the least of your worries, I think. The motivation is to go back in two weeks and they take it out. And that was all right. That's fine. Because I was having a chat with the nurse and then it was just
out. She ripped it out.
It was out. I was really worried about that. One of the things I worried about the most. But the motivation, and then you have to sit in the waiting room, which I did with Farmer John, and you've got to drink two jugs of water and
piss.
And then go to the toilet yourself and get there without wetting yourself. And you really have to concentrate because your bladder area has taken a bit of a battering and it needs to be retrained to hold everything in. And so, but it is a good motivation because if you don't do that or don't manage that, then you have to have another catheter put back in and you're awake when that happens. So that is definitely not happening.
And
so
that's a kind of milestone because you get to the 2 weeks and you're like, okay, the worst is over at that point. Because it's kind of you're healing now. Things are getting better. Catheter's out, one step down. Yeah. So we're moving forwards. And that feels like progress.
Yeah, yeah. But it was a bit of a shock because you have to concentrate. And they give you the load of pads to put in your pants. Whopping great things. And the little movements of like getting up from the chair and standing up. If you don't concentrate, you will wet yourself. It's really weird. So at the same time as that, I forgot about this, but I had to inject myself, didn't I? And I think that was that antibiotics or stuff to
no, help for with clotting, wasn't it?
I can't quite remember. This is one of my regrets, is not writing a lot of this stuff down at the time. But you get 28 days of one injection a day, which you have to put in yourself into your own stomach area, around the area where you've had the surgery. And the injections are really tiny, diabetic type needles, really thin. But oh, they hurt. They really, really hurt. I was covered in bruises, wasn't I, on my stomach. And they didn't go for ages. I was really looking forward to the end of that as well, which was, that seemed to go on forever, and you're trying to find a space that you haven't injected before. And that was quite traumatic. But again, you're counting down, and once you've done the 28, it's a massive relief, and it's like another little pass that you've made, and you're moving forward to recovery. So I think that's really good. From day one.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. I'm just trying to look. It's to prevent blood clotting.
Okay.
Yeah. You'd.
So you get sent home with the injections. You get sent home with the sauce that you put into the injection. The little files, weren't they? Little tiny things.
Liquid, yeah.
And I can't remember.
No, they were already. They were ready to go. Yeah, you don't have to dick around with the needles. They're ready to go. They're loaded up,
but you get just sent home with jab all it in. Of it yourself. Yeah, yes. So no one comes.
Yeah, so you get the pack of 30 needles or something. Your sanitary pads, your Viagra.
Yeah.
So you get everything and your catheter, and you're like, the first 2 weeks is kind of, I guess, like when you have a newborn baby, you sort of go home. This 2 weeks is you sort stuff out at home yourself. Yeah. This is what you look after and this is what you need to get set up.
So from day one, they said first week you walk 10 minutes is all you need to do, which I did. And that's part of the challenge. And I did that round the house I started off with.
Yeah, and walking was kind of like Pingu.
And you would say it hasn't really changed.
That's the same pace that you use around the parks.
Slowly the mega bear.
Mm-hmm.
And when you've got the swinging bag hanging out of your shorts, then you know you don't want to go too far. Plus, I sort of probably thought at the time, if something happens, I don't want to be too far away. But
no, you weren't up for going to the pub.
Did that every every day, then moved, they say move it on to 15, obviously I moved it on to 20, around the garden, and keep that going every day. It's important to get up and move, get up and make your own cup of tea, get up and get your own water. It's you recover a lot better and a lot quicker the more you move around within reason. But you can't overdo it and overstretch yourself, because you don't want to undo the stitches and stuff like that. And my brother, I think he took a more laissez-faire approach, didn't he? And was doing more of the laying down. And I think it took him longer to recover. So there is proof in this.
Yes.
And then, again, it's another little challenge that you sort of, my excitement was to get rid of the catheter, get over to the park and walk around, mainly piss it myself.
I think that was the main issue for you afterwards, wasn't it? So the catheter's out, you finished the injections, things are improving, but you don't wet yourself all the time, but for quite some time, you're dribbling wee and you're wearing pads. That is the reality of it.
Yeah, so I had pads on all the time.
And, yeah, so you're a little bit concerned about going out in public, a little bit self-conscious. It's not a nice feeling, obviously.
No light trousers were worn in this period.
But just, you just sort of weren't really... Like, we didn't know that would happen. I guess you just don't think. And so that is sort of... You just build up a bit of confidence. And that is normal. I mean, you have... Your body has to start working normally again, you know. So it's going to take some time.
Yeah, and you can't do your pelvic floor exercises for a period of time. You have to let your body rest for a bit.
No, and it is back to normal, so...
Yeah, so
things do fix. Yeah.
So what the peeing in your pants happens, I found, for me, if you sneezed, if you were laughing a lot, or sometimes when you're
coughing,
sitting down for quite a while.
Or you needed a wee, you need a wee and you can't get there in time.
Yeah.
Like the sensation of a wee, but it's already coming out.
Yeah. But nothing major. Nothing,
no, nothing. And you never actually wet yourself.
No, and again, this is where it's different from my brother, because
he might not want everyone to know.
I think it's a sharing game. he was.
Yeah, but that was about 3 weeks ago.
He said he was on the golf course and the buggy, and he said, "Hang on a minute, you're going to have to stop. It's coming." And he said he stood up, and it was just all going down his legs, and he couldn't do anything about it.
The key to all of this is really to take advice, like really try and be mobile, really try and be positive, really take the painkillers, keep hydrated. It's like, do all of the things that you don't really feel like doing and you don't want to listen to, but they really do work.
Yeah, and that's stressed by the nurses. They're the people that you need to, they look after you. They really, you're not really wanting to hear it when you've just had an operation. You just want a load of pain relief, don't you really? And
yeah.
You want some treats.
Yes,
and you want to lie down. And
yeah, and you probably don't think, I want to get up and walk around when I'm feeling rubbish or I'm in pain. But you've got to do it.
Yeah, no, you know, I was working at home every day, and so you can do things. And I think you'd go nuts if you didn't. Do that, but just to stress the differences in recovery for different people. My brother, he had a lot of pain, which he thought might be appendicitis type thing, but what had happened was one of the internal stitches had nicked a nerve, and that's just bad luck and nothing, you know, untoward. I think with every operation there are different risks, and he was getting a lot of pain for quite a few weeks, and basically had to just wait for that stitch to dissolve, and then the pain would go away. So he had quite a lot of painkillers, didn't he, for quite a long period of time.
And he
actually
was back in there. And then, I mean, since then he's had another hernia as well, so he's been back in for another operation in the same place.
His stomach looks like a shark's bit. It's quite harsh down there. The other surprise, which I thought was pretty horrendous, and I didn't know about this, was a pain in my shoulder from waking up after the operation, which you said is
air. Yeah.
Air inside your body.
Yeah, it's where they pump air inside with any surgery, and my sister has it all the time. But they fill your body with air so they can get to everything. And
it stays in.
Yeah,
bit,
it stays in. And I don't know why it's always in the shoulder, but it tends to cause shoulder pain. And it is always the air, yeah.
Absolute killer. Like Spock was doing one of his death grip things on your shoulder. Really bad. The other just sort of admin bit of this process is it's quite difficult to wash when you've got your catheter in, but you have to, obviously. And just sort of hauling yourself and your equipment into the shower and trying not to get your stitches area wet, trying not to knock your catheter. And so you don't really feel like you're clean. Mm. And that's a bit demoralising after a while.
But it's not for long, is it?
No, it's not.
And the air, just to be clear, it's carbon dioxide that is trapped in the diaphragm, because that's where you breathe. And it ends up in the lower chest and the shoulder area, which is called referred pain after surgery.
Yeah,
trapped gas in the shoulder.
Your friend Google doctor. What else was there? So, yeah.
Stitches, they sort of flap around a bit. They're like butterfly stitches. So you can see them on the outside, but they dissolved. And they did take a while.
Yeah.
So they were covered to start with, and you leave them covered.
Yes.
So about a week or 2 weeks or whatever they tell you, and don't get them wet.
Yeah, don't touch them.
And then when you're allowed, they can go in the shower. But you want to keep the area clean, but you don't want hanging bits that can get covered in muck, basically. But it's kind of common sense, isn't it?
Quite
and then
a lot of blood
after
the operation.
Like crusty brown. Dark blood, it's dry blood. So it's the shock of kind of looking in your pants or taking off plasters, and it's like dark blood where it's dried, and you kind of, it's a shock. Yeah. But there's nothing wrong. It's all completely normal. And the stitches afterwards, which I said to you, and it did work, if you carried it on now, not straight away, but just as an aside, there is a product called Bio Oil.
Which, love this, don't you?
Well, it's like women use it for stretch marks, especially after pregnancy. Pregnant women, it's really good for scarring. I used it on a scar, I burnt my arm years ago on the oven, really bad. You put bio oil on it every day on the scar, and they will disappear. It takes a long time.
Uncle Bill uses it as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, so if you put it on every day and you did that for 6 months, the scars would go completely, I think.
I had the bruises. I had for at least 6 months.
Yeah, bruises were big, and that was kind of like, wow, that's a lot of bruising. Your whole stomach goes from kind of black to purple to greeny yellow.
Yeah, disgusting.
And that sort of moved around a bit, and kind of around your gooch and your balls, and there's a lot of bruising. And I think that's part of the pain as well, is sort of, it's discomfort and pain, but it's bruising that's coming out over a long period of time.
Yeah.
So where you feel like, oh, I don't want to move, or my, you know, it's hurting somewhere, you got to push through it because it's bruising. Or get on arnica or something, which might help as well.
Yeah. So still carrying on with the pain relief. Didn't have alcohol for a month. Didn't really want
it. It's the only time in your life.
Yeah, that's not happening again. And quite a bit of weight loss, actually, which was we'll take the positives. At the same time, in fact, as a part of this process, and other people, you get given free prescriptions for 5 years. So that's good. Really good.
Yeah, it's a shame it doesn't cover me as well.
Yeah, you save a lot of money, wouldn't it? And you start taking Viagra, or whatever the brand would be called, Tadalafil, Sildenafil or something like that. All sort of different brands doing the same thing, and they give you that because it increases your blood circulation, becomes more effective, and that helps to heal your body. And I didn't really know that, but also at some point you might need assistance with getting a bone.
Yeah, so the Viagra you take all the time, and you still take that now.
occasionally.
Sometimes. Yeah, so you're given that on prescription. So you sort of, you're told to take it for every day. Is it for a year?
Every day for a year.
Yeah, yes. After surgery. And it's to keep the blood flowing. This doesn't mean that you're expected to have sex every day. This is to keep blood flowing in all of the right areas.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing. So take it.
So that's part of, you know, moving around and keeping your circulation going. That helps your body to repair and repair quicker. But you must ask questions as well, because it doesn't always suit. And I was put on 20 milligrams of a certain brand to start with.
Yeah, that didn't, yeah, you thought you were going to have a heart attack.
I thought I was going to have a heart attack. I thought I was going to shit myself, basically. And, and that was not, I didn't really know what was wrong, because I'd never had it before. And then they switched to a different brand and went
and a lower dose.
To 5 milligrams, which is practically, I think that's the lowest dose you can have. And that was much better. And I just took that as the norm.
Yeah.
And then once you get to, I think it's a year, the GP will probably say, how do you want to proceed? Do you want, because they would prefer you not to take a daily pill. And you can get it for, like, when you need it for occasional use, depending on how active you are in that department.
Yeah.
But at the start, it does feel like you're going to have a new life where you don't have any more erections and you mainly piss yourself.
I think that was the fear all the way through. And this is the underlying, obviously, this is a concern for men, I think, and everybody who's going through anything where it's going to affect your functionality is going to be concerning. And that was always a worry. And it's something that we discussed to start with. And quite frankly, I said, I'd rather that you survived than we have a sex life. When it comes down to those options, there is no question.
You can't use the argument for anything. That time has passed.
That is the reality of those options. And that obviously is the case. Way that things that were presented to us, which we discussed in the early episodes, was kind of like, there are lots of options you can have to assist getting an erection afterwards. So you can use all kinds of elastic band situations. You can inject it. You can do everything. There are loads of options to get it up. If you want to get it up, it can happen.
Imagine injecting it.
I know. Well, that was always like a really...
In a romantic moment.
I'm not sure that would be high romance.
My brother was aiming at getting
maybe
a
role
pump,
play.
Wasn't he? He really wanted a pump.
Yeah, there are pumps. There are all these things available.
But it is a bit of a tester, and it does test your relationship. Because when we got back in the saddle, that I can't say that was the
it wasn't the easy
best situation.
No, and it wasn't normal, and it wasn't erect. The reality is, let's be completely frank here, that you couldn't get an erection to start with. And that's you obviously, as a couple, you need to work through these things together, but it doesn't stay like that forever. And it's perseverance, and it's also kind of showing that you care about each other. It's
Yes,
you make it work together, don't you? But I think the best thing is to be really open with each other and honest about how you're feeling. There's no way I would have wanted you to try and rush something. But I think at the same time, you wanted to try it out to see what you were dealing with.
I think so, because I think
it's kind of want to get it out of the way.
The fitness thing that you just there's no point pushing it down the line, is there? You've got to get on board and practice. And my feeling as well, that is, I felt probably that you were almost more worried about it than I was.
Yeah, you don't want to hurt. You don't want to do anything that's going to cause pain.
That can create.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. Tricky and obviously situation. That can affect things longer term as well. So it's up to the couple, isn't it? Or, you know, you might not be in a relationship, but you can try things out yourself as well, you know.
And with both of these situations, what I found quite amazing is that a lot of my group of friends or older people
already
take Viagra anyway.
Yeah, the more you're talking about it, and everyone's on it anyway.
Or friends are saying, well, yeah, I often leak, you know, if
yeah,
I can't stop myself having a wee.
Well, yeah, women have this problem all of the time.
Yeah, so but nobody talks about it, do they? So they don't. It's not something that is comfortable for a lot of people to talk about. But I think if you've had an operation, then maybe there's the distraction of that, and maybe people think that, well, that's a light-hearted subject, really, after you've been through cancer or something. So it's it was a tricky and a worry, but like the doctor and the nurses said, you've got to give it a year, and you do, everything does improve, and so now it's fully functioning and no hassles at all, I would say, at the moment. You have a PSA during the year of recovery. You have a PSA check every 3 months. They expect it to be, it's never zero, but it's sort of non-traceable, I think they call it. And so I suppose that plays on your mind a little bit when you're going in for the first one, to make sure that they've got everything out of the, with the surgery, they've removed everything. And the PSA doesn't show up anything that they've missed. So, yeah, that was a bit of a worry, but they were all, you know, there's been no trace of any PSA readings at all from every check.
Yeah, everything's been good so far, and you have had regular appointments.
Yes, I have. So as you go through the year, I think everything gets better. You get more mobile. I was lifting, wasn't I? I was only allowed to lift little boxes. I wasn't allowed to lift three boxes of 12.
Let's not listen to Henry's advice about this.
But I wanted to get back in and start moving some boxes of wine around. And that was fine. It's just, I think you just, where your body hasn't used those muscles so much around your core, isn't it? That's, I think that would be something I would do differently if I had to do it again, would make sure that your core strength was the best it could possibly be, because you really rely on those muscles when you're, like, post-operation, you realise how much that area you use. And it's painful, and I think the fitter you are, your recovery is speedier, I think.
Yeah, which would make sense.
Yeah. So I think that's it, isn't it, really?
There's probably stuff that we've forgotten.
Yeah, so we were thinking that, you know, clearly we wanted to offer our thanks and real appreciation to everyone. We told them all before, but to the hospital team and friends and family who've offered support and stuff.
That's the key thing, isn't it? We have a great support network around us with friends, family, customers as well. You know, like, everybody was really, really supportive. And this was during COVID. This was during the toughest time of everybody's lives in the world, being shut down. The business was closed. You know, like, we had to shut the shops. It was a really tough time. And without everyone support, you know, like, people really stepped up. It was amazing.
I'd probably underestimate, because I always thought I was going to be better and be cured and be healthy again in some sort of shape or form. I didn't really think about how other people would have worried just by being around it. Some people were really upset, weren't they?
It's scary. If something happens to you, that has an effect with everyone. You know, like, that affects the business, that affects all of our lives, all of our staff, everyone. You know, like, we're like a family unit as well, the way we run our shop. So it really does have a massive impact on everyone around. People want to help. I think that's the other thing, is actually accepting help is a good thing. You know, and I'm not very good at that normally. And there were times when I let people in. You know, I had a wine festival tasting with 200 people booked in, and you couldn't be there to host it. So we had a group of friends who just rocked up and hosted it with me and helped set up the whole thing. You know, things like that where people just turned up and it was like, actually, just please help. I just need you to put some tables out, or can you just pick up some bread or something? Or
it's, we're lucky.
People want to help as well, because you feel really helpless when it's not you going through it. So sometimes saying yes to picking up some shopping or something makes other people feel like they're doing something useful for you as well, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think we are lucky because we know quite a lot of people, don't we? And we're not insular, I guess. We have quite a few social groups where people are very close to us. I would say that for me, there's... it's not that I get defined by it, but most have a lot of conversations where people ask, am I all right still? And that's fine. There's a lot more chat about, you know, going to trade tastings, for example, lots of blokes there, my age group. Generally now, we chat about, are you all right in your area, in your Schwanzig area, or are you all right in your stomach area, and are you all right with your mental health? And 5 years ago, we wouldn't have been doing that. And maybe that's just because we're all in our starting to get into the 50s.
But that's the whole point of doing things like this podcast, because if people talked about it more, or more open about what they're going through, or physicalities, or ailments, I think it would, you'd be able to get help a lot quicker.
Yes.
You find out if things are normal or wrong, and then you go and get help.
Yes.
That's the whole point of communication and being really honest about things.
And the point of this series of podcasts is to save men's lives, is to get it on the radar of blokes getting it on the radar of their GPs and trying to spot that. Most blokes will be okay, most blokes will be fit and healthy, but if you aren't, if you have got cancer, it's always best to get hold of it really, really quickly. It's the same with women, isn't it, with breast cancer?
Yeah, with any early diagnosis is key, and then treatment as quickly as you can. And sometimes that means you have to chase appointments, and you have to constantly ask, and you have to be on hold for hours and hours, and it's frustrating, but it's life and death sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's better to rule things out than overthink or be left with something that you're not sure what it is. If you've got any doubts, just get it checked.
Yeah, and I think the one thing I didn't do, which I wish I had done, and you do quite a lot of this, is make notes and write some sort of journal of as things were going on, because there's quite a lot of things happen to you that are new and that I didn't really understand. And I sort of just assumed I would remember everything, but obviously, just by doing this, I sort of discovered that I blanked some things out.
Well, yeah, it's trauma as well. So you go through trauma and you're going to block out some of it because it's not very nice to experience.
Yeah, and if you have to refer back to it, then it would be, I think it would have been a lot easier if I'd written some of this stuff down. And they do give you they do tell you to do that. I just ignored that bit.
Mm.
So that's what I'm
too busy trying to run around the garden and lift things.
Well, I did, I did do that. And now look at me. Fine figure of a man. Quite a lot more of me now than there was then. So hopefully the app was useful. As we said before, please spread the word. Because if it can help one person, then our job is done. And we've already had some great feedback from blokes, haven't we, who've listened to it. And
we've had some really good feedback.
We've gone and had tests or asked for tests.
Yep.
There we have it. That's the end.
We might be back, you never know.
We might be back, yeah.
We do have our wine podcast as well.
Yeah.
So we'll carry on whining.
So thanks for listening. And stay fit,
stay
and well
healthy,
and healthy.
Yeah. And if you've got any medical queries, please just go and get checked. And talk to your mates about it as well.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye. Bye.